Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the
hey, everybody, this
Wisp.
Is Greg with the Brothers Wisp. Today, I have a special guest with me. It is Tommy C. I don't know if he wants to maintain his anonymity or if he wants to actually tell us what his last name is. Tommy, say hi.
Hi, Greg. It's Krogan. But yeah, I just go by Tommy C because on Facebook, I have my full name all written out and I got that like domain. And then I was like, this is a horrible idea. So I try not to make everybody miserable.
Tommy C, we'll just pretend that's your DJ name.
Yeah, I go by, actually it's T-Cent is my
T-Cent. I think I like that even better. That's killer, yeah. Man. All right, so today Tommy actually was the first and so far only participant to respond to the give us five tips for the community, right? So It's five things you've run into this week, this month, that you've gathered over a lifetime. It doesn't matter, just five tips you think are important for anybody to know, whether you're beginner, you've been out there for a while. And then at the end of all of it, we're going to throw in my quick five. So Tommy, kick us off with number one.
Number one, it is have a test bench. So I actually haven't been doing Wisp stuff for at all long. It's like been a year and a half-ish. And before that, my closest thing to networking was screwing around with Linux routers or Linksys. And so what I came into our network and there was a shamble of stuff. And basically, if we ever wanted to get like try something out, the only way to do it was on the customer network. And it was just horrible because I would have to like wait till like 4 a.m. or be like, well, nobody's using it right now. I can get away with this. But eventually I was just like, forget this. And I got like five or six of our like decommissioned routers and they're all we run MikroTik for everything. So it's beautifully easy. And I just created a miniature version of our network. And so like I tested out everything that we wanted to try, like new bandwidth limiting stuff, all of our OSPF stuff we're doing, and like figured out a lot of stuff that's like just been one of the steps forward. And so like for me, anybody like have a test network. And as I said in my tip, everyone has a test network, but not one. Everyone has a production. And being able to differentiate the two, I think it was on Ubiquity forums where I saw that or DSL reports, but God, whoever had it, that's freaking genius. And that's the thing is like, just set up a test thing and just make it so that you can figure out what's going on. And then you can have a default, like we know this works.
So, yeah. Yeah.
That's
I think
my number one.
That's and your line there is one of my favorites. Yeah. Everybody's got a test network. Not everybody's got a production. And I 100% agree with you on that. Especially when you're going to roll out something new, right? You're going to try a new authentication system or you want to try and transporting in a different way, right? It's so dangerous to test on your network, right?
Yeah. Admittedly, you know, there's always that short period of time where you're like, well, I guess we're going to find out if this actually works.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously
minimize that.
It sometimes it looks great in the lab, but until you start actually running traffic across it, you can't really tell what it's really going to do. Right. I mean, you can run test traffic across and see what your CPU utilization is going to do on your test boxes, but you can't always tell what it's going to do to say TCP traffic, where maybe it mangles, you know, 0.5% of everything. And all, you know what I mean? So but it's better than nothing, right? And it gives you a good baseline to start from. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great number one. So you said that you're new to the Wisp market. What were you? What was your previous life?
It's a long, sad story. But basically, I have a philosophy degree through no fault of my own. It's just summarization. So I came. Yeah, I was like, well, I know where I work. My family's been using their internet for as long as we've had internet. And as a kid, I got an amateur radio license. And I was always into computers. So when I was graduating high school, my current boss now had been annoyed enough by me by like various questions and stuff when he would come out that he was like, well, you want a job? And I was like, nah, I want to go to college. And years later, I was like, yeah, see if they might want to hire me still. And surprise, surprise, like they've been looking for somebody to fill my job for like a year and a half. And they were like, yes, we want to hire you. And we don't care if you don't have any qualification whatsoever.
Got you. Somebody who can contemplate the nature of the wireless network as well as fix it, right?
Yes, I can do that.
Yeah. That's tremendous. So was it you who was talking about like Asimov and stuff like that the other day in the Slack?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I actually wrote some papers off of some of his stuff.
Okay. I was thinking, wow, that's really out of left field for a Wisp guy. I was just curious where that was coming from. I love well-rounded people. I be one at some point.
I would not say that I am that. I have some specialties that I am very deep knowledge about, but as my family can vouch, I have some very weak spots.
As do we all. So speaking of weak spots, let's fill in some more people's weak spots. What do you have for your number two tip?
Okay, so this actually comes from my amateur radio stuff. And radios and antennas are just like old flashlights. So if you remember like the old mag lights, especially the ones that you could like adjust the beam width and such, you'd have that weirdly weird pattern like comes out. And I always adjusted the hell out of it so I could minimize that because I was always frustrated by it. But that is the exact same way that any dish works. And most antennas, really, that we use. So, like, and being able to visualize that helps you figure out that, okay, we have side lobes, there's all this other stuff, and that is, like, the core portion. Like, if you're going to try to install dishes, really antennas in general, like, recognize that, okay, just because you have a connection doesn't mean that it's lined up. And so many times when I'm helping people on the Mimosa forums, it's, have you checked the alignment? Are you certain? And people come back and be like, oh, yeah, it was out of alignment, and we were using way too wide of a spectrum, and there was interference. And that we narrowed our channel, fixed the alignment, life's so much better. And it's like, wow, there you go. And that's one thing that we really struggled with here at my work is, for a long time, we were out in the middle of nowhere, and you could connect people up at negative 75, have chains mismatched all the hells because we were running nano station M5s. And that's been my crusade of this last year, is getting rid of all those horrible connections, upgrading them, fixing them, changing, moving antennas. Get as many of that stuff up, because that just makes life so much better. When you have things lined up well, you move way more traffic. And that's where you see it. Like, people will say like, oh, I'm getting all this crazy amount of bandwidth. It's because they have super strict rules on what they'll connect to their access points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know when I first got started, and I'm probably light years behind you as far as radio stuff goes, but I'm such a visual person. It was really a difficult, right? Because I was always like a routing and switching guy, right? Like physically locking stuff in, and all of that makes sense to me, right? And then you get into this radio stuff, and it's just magic, you know. Until somebody explained to me that you're right. It's radio waves are just like light, right? It's just in a different frequency, so it reacts sometimes the same way light does, right? So if you've got like a metallic shiny surface, a good portion of your signal will like bounce off of it, right? And that sort of broke my brain at first. I didn't, you know, but so if you think of how does light behave, radio waves sort of does as well, right? So that helped me a lot. And I think you're right. You know, having something you can lock into your brain can really help you understand these concepts. And I think that's a tremendous one. I think it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And as many times as you can, like always try and like compare or make an analogy between something you understand and what you're trying to figure out. The analogy isn't the perfect, and it's not, it's an analogy, it's just useful, but it does make like life so much easier when you're trying to explain that to a tech or somebody or an installer who just hasn't been able to figure this out, and you're like, here, look at this, and then like the light bulb flashes in their eyes, and it's like, oh
yeah.
So using that example actually helps a lot.
And I saw in your written version of the tip as well, you said, you know, sometimes when you're aligning, to get good alignment, just keep moving another 20 degrees and see what happens. And I've been there before where it locked in, it came up and I thought it was good, but I was actually connected to like a side lobe. Right. And so, I wasn't getting the throughput I expected and things like that. And then I just kept going a little bit more and there it was, I hit the center of the beam, you know? So you're right. And that actually kind of feeds into, some of your other tips, which I don't want to trample over the top of, but let's hit number three. Let's keep trucking.
Yeah. Don't break EIRP, which is the like, I can't even remember it off the top of my, amateur radio, but I can't remember acronyms, but, basically it's how much, the total output is of your radio combined with antenna power. You take antenna dB and your radio output power. And 5 gigahertz, it changes a lot. 2.4, it's wonderful in that it's 36 the whole spectrum through. In 5 gigahertz, it shifts up and down and between various portions. You can go online and find that out, but it's not worth it. Don't break it. Every single radio in this industry, you can easily get around it. And I've seen it, and it's such a problem because you'll do it, and then you start doing it more, and then you're getting people that are like bad connections. And that was a struggle we had, is like we just had so many bad connections that we were able to get them previously, and it's just like, well, we have to really change how we're doing this, one, so that especially a few years ago, Colorado had a pretty big spree of SCC coming by and checking to make sure you're not going over EIRP in the DFS channels. And there was a lot of guys who went out of business because they couldn't pay the fines.
And oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty big news. And so that was one reason why we just never used DFS for a lot of times, is just because we're like, well, best to just not do it and deal with the noise. We've been able to transition more by being like, nope, we are legal, we'll be fine, and we have good connections. But it's been a long struggle, and I see it all the time on forums, Ubiquity, Mimosa, everybody. You know, they'll be pumping out a huge amount of signal, and it kind of goes back to my second point, is like they pump out a bunch of signals so that they can get the connection to go when they don't actually have a good alignment, and aligning the antennas would do more than making more noise. And you're not just harming yourself, you're harming everyone else in the industry.
That's right.
Any other radio, even if it's not using the same channel, is still going to hear. And this is like in that realm of like referring back to colors and analogy and stuff, like each channel is a different color in the color spectrum. You kind of think of it that way. And even if you're making a blue light, well, some of that blue light is going to show up in the purple lights channel space too, and less so much in the yellow light. But, you know, you're still making noise, and just being a general good neighbor, one, and two, just making your stuff. Because I wouldn't be surprised if someday a FCC is going to be like, hey, this is a cash cow. Going around checking out WISPs and seeing who's breaking rules, and we can just find the heck out of it.
Like parking tickets, is that where you're going with this?
Oh yeah, I that's where parking tickets have gone. So, you know what, we live in a capitalistic society, and our government is just the same as much wanting to make money as anybody else. So, you know, it's I would not be surprised if at some point that becomes a problem. So. And and a lot of radio manufacturers now are actually like Ubiquity. They will lower the total throughput that they will go. They won't go as high MCS rates if you're at max channel, if you're maxing out your transmit power. You have to actually drop your transmit power a certain amount to be able to achieve max throughput through your links, as that's one thing other companies I've noticed are doing similar deals to encourage people to drop their channel widths, drop their transmit power, so that, you know, you're not getting these guys who are putting up omnis and then two omnis across town from each other and trying to get them connected and just making a whole mess of everything.
Yeah, so. And I would assume that their equipment's not going to perform at peak efficiency when you have max EIRP set up, right? So they probably want to encourage you not to, well, one, to be a good steward, to be a good neighbor, but also to, you know, use the equipment as best it can be used. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like turning your radio up all the way to 11 and you start hearing like clipping for some of the noises. That's what starts happening when you transmit on the higher end of the power spectrum. You really start to get that, and you don't get as pretty of a signal coming out. So definitely best to not do that if you can't, if you don't have to.
So something you put for your fourth, which is one of the things that gives me a lot of anxiety about WISPs. It says wireless is not set and forget.
Yeah.
So again, it comes back to that. Wireless is kind of a living creature that you have to tend to, right? It's like a little Tamagotchi. You got to continue to feed, otherwise it's going to die.
Yeah.
So what do you mean by that?
So, I come from my company is a telephone company originally, and the practice in telephone industry, from what I've seen, is you put the stuff in the ground, and 4 out of 5 days out of the week, you don't have to deal with customers other than if it's a billing issue or something like that, or you're trying to deal with stuff. Like, the goal is always is that. And in networking, it seems to be the same way. It's like you set it up and then you forget as much as you can. And so what we struggled with for a long time was, like, we set it up and we're like, all right, well, as long as people aren't calling us, there's not a problem. We'll roll from there. And it's just like was the worst policy, because you're constantly just waiting for people to give you a call, and like people call like in groups or whatever, and then you're just, you're always just kind of chasing your tail, not knowing what's going on with the network. And wireless specifically, like, antennas will get out of alignment either because of thermal stresses or wind, or you get a weird stuff. Hey, there's a million different things that can make it not right. Be
and like the seasons, the changing of the seasons, right? Your alignment will adjust sometimes, right?
Yeah, or trees grow in the way, or somebody builds a building.
That's right, in the spring when leaves pop up. It's a very different scenario. Yeah.
So, like, I am a big, like, the biggest thing that has helped us, like, go from people complaining and hating us on Facebook to, hey, these guys are great. You totally should give them a call if you're having issues. And, like, maybe you want to consider going to them for internet. Has been, we set up monitoring originally with Ubiquiti Air Control, and now we're, like, doing all sorts of different silly things. But, like, we got something, and then we, like, went through and we're like, these people are unacceptable. This is not what needs to be here. And we were just calling people, and, like, for a while, people were just floored, like, what the heck, you're giving me a call and saying that my internet's, well, yeah, it's been slow for a couple of months, I haven't figured I could give you guys a call. And it's like, well, all right, here we go. And so just going through and telling them, hey, your internet's crap, let me fix that, just has completely changed our interaction with our customers. And people don't call me anymore with saying, oh, it's been working, it's been horrible for months. It's, hey, it's went down this time. And I'm like, oh yeah, I saw that. I was, or the other night, I was texting one of my customers, business customers, so like, hey, your antenna went down. And they're like, oh yeah, we're remodeling the floor, so we unplugged everything. So I was like, oh, well, cool. And then a couple hours later, they're like, oh, we plugged everything back in. And I was like, yep, wonderful, life's good. And like that just builds loyalty. People are like, they there's a, I can't remember the name of, but it's this psychological syndrome where you have two different people who have two different service providers, and one service provider never has any issues, and the person's like, oh, all right, their service is good. And then this other service provider, they have a big issue, but they are very responsive. They like contact the person like, oh, we're sorry, let us fix this. And the second person will actually report having had better service and that they're more satisfied with their service, even though the service was bad for a period of time, but their human interaction was better and they actually had some, and they're like, oh, if something breaks, I know that they're going to take care of me. And that makes people feel good. And that's what you're selling, is making people feel good and letting them get on the internet. But in the end, it's making people feel good. That's
yeah.
all sellers.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Peace of mind is huge, you know, especially with with vendors. I mean, if you're in the telco business and you're getting upstream or transit from somebody, you know what real pain is. You know, having to deal mm-hmm. with those guys is such a nightmare. So when there's an off chance where you have a positive interaction, I mean, that sort of thing really sticks in your head. And everybody mm-hmm. makes mistakes, right? We all make mistakes. Yeah. If you can just own up to it quickly and be as transparent as possible, that's all I ever ask of anybody, right? Just own mm-hmm. it and let's work towards resolution. I get yeah. you, man. Changing the experience, that's a big one. All right, so number five, mm-hmm. which arguably is your most important.
Yeah, if you climb towers, have a good safety guy give you classes. I'm terrified of heights. I came in telling them that I am terrified of heights. And they're like, well, we want you that much, we'll take you anyways. And we have 8 towers between 80 to 140 feet. So, no, I was not looking forward to working that. And particularly, like, I'm hybrid network guy, installer guy, like, a little bit of everything. So I have to climb ladders and roofs and stuff. So, for the first, like, few months of working, I was like, we have to have a freaking safety meeting every month for, like, 4 hours. And it drove me nuts. I'm the type of person who's like, tell me once and then let me forget you and then let me run away. And it just drove me nuts. But we have a policy of every 6 months we'll do tower training, and like they go through absolutely everything, like clipping off, having good safety equipment, making sure you're actually paying attention if you're the ground crew to the guy climbing, vice versa, like making and just all those little things. Because when it comes to like a good safety guy, how he's going to approach it is minimizing costs to you, which is like not minimizing what work you can get done. Because the idea of safety is that you're going to be able to work today, tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, and be productive. And with how our whole country and everything works, somebody gets hurt on the job, that person not only isn't producing for you anymore, but you also have to pay for like hospital bills,
yeah, workers' comp, all that stuff.
That's a huge setback for any company to have if you have issues like that. And I know one company that they did a training year like 5-6 years ago, and they haven't had anything since, and they've hired new people, and it's just like you're just asking for a problem to happen, especially when you're climbing towers, which is particularly dangerous. It's more dangerous than just your general day-to-day stuff. And even just like the frustrating portion of safety stuff is like the guy's there to make sure you remember and like do you your job, which is to follow safety stuff. My now favorite example is our safety guy. We had him come down when we were setting up a new tower, and it was in a competitor's area, and the competitor, we believe, called OSHA with some fake violations. And our safety guy is actually on first name basis with the OSHA lady who deals with our industry, And because he calls her and asks her questions about, okay, well, what about this and what about that? Because he just doesn't know some particulars of things. And OSHA rules are big, extensive, and weird and up to interpretation. And so she gets these calls and calls him and is like, hey, do you know if Rogan Telephone was doing this building, setting up a tower? He's like, yeah, I was there. And she's like, oh, really? And he's like, yeah, we set it up. We followed the rules as much as we can. We were climbing. We were tied off. We blah, da, 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 da. Did we probably break an OSHA rule? But yeah, we don't think so, but we probably did because you can't hardly walk and fart without breaking the rule. To which actually she laughed. So it's an okay joke. And it just ended there because, one, we had our safety guy there. He was able to vouch that we had a good, safe environment when we were doing this, and he had checked off like all these boxes, and you know that saved us from having OSHA come in and maybe fine us $500 for each of our spray cans that are just sitting on the shelf, not in a sealed safety container, or you know any of the other dozen sillinesses that if OSHA were to come in and just try and bend you over for it. It's like, you know, it's a pain in the neck, but it will help. And you know, if you have your installers, you don't hire them because they're the like geniuses of the world and they do everything right. If they were that, they wouldn't be installers.
Right.
So, you know, just being clear with them and being like, hey, do this. This is your job. Your job is to not die. And to not die, follow these rules. It's going to save you money in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you hit on a lot of really good points there. One is, protection of the company, right? If you happen to be listening to this and you own the company, it helps prevent you, it helps protect you against liability, right? So it's, yes, we did the training if a mishap happens, right? That's like why a company has HR. It's not there to help the employees, it's to protect the company. Never confuse that in your mind, because you'll get the runaround really quick. But also, if these people working for you, right, they have people that they're responsible for, and I had to, I'm not exactly, I don't have a problem with heights. I've worked on top of buildings plenty of times on catwalks, stuff like that. But I've climbed towers several times, and there's something about Spider-Maning your way up the side of something that breaks my brain, and I do not like it. If I never scale the side of another tower, I'll be 100% fine with that. You know, that's no problem for me. But I did the 100% tie off, right? And so if I hadn't had people giving me guidance, you know, that training, maybe I wouldn't have known to do that, right? And so I think if you've got people that they've got, anybody they're responsible for, if you're listening to this and you climb and you've got kids, you've got a wife, you've got anybody that relies on you, if you're not 100% tying off, you're doing it wrong. And I don't understand why you wouldn't. It's inconvenient. A lot of times when I was climbing towers, it might have taken me an extra 10 minutes, you know, or more to get up that tower doing it. But, you know, if there was a slip, if there was a big gust of wind, which would occasionally happen, I know my kids are still going to have somebody contributing to their college fund. You know what I mean? It's my wife doesn't have to try and figure out how to pay the mortgage next month. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just the basics.
Yeah. I'm the guy who probably wouldn't care because I'm single, male, nothing, nobody responsible for me. But, you know, it's just one of those things. It's like, I really enjoy doing networking stuff. I don't care. I don't want to, my last moments, be like, well, shit, I don't get to do networking stuff because I didn't tie off.
Right.
That's
or
not worth
the
it.
Long on the ladder broke, or the rung on the ladder happened to let go. Yeah, that's a horrible last thought.
Yeah. So you have a good safety guy. Make sure he's a good safety guy. If he's letting you get by with stuff that you're like, maybe the... If he's letting you get by with stuff that if something went wrong, somebody would die, maybe look at getting a new safety guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And it doesn't matter how strapped for cash you are. You have money for a safety guy if you're climbing.
Yeah. Or get a company to do it. then your life's better.
Yeah. Oh man. The day I quit climbing and had other people do it, my life drastically increased in ease and comfort. I can tell you that for sure. Yeah. Just knowing that if a storm rolled through, I wasn't the one that had to get on top of that thing. It was so much better.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, Tommy, I sure appreciate the tips. I've got a few I want to throw at you and see what your thoughts are on it.
I would love to hear them.
So mine aren't as earth-shattering. Mine are probably a little bit more common sense, but I'm a plain Jane kind of guy. So, or maybe plain Jack. I don't know how you're supposed to say that. Let's see. My number one is keep a spare on the shelf for your equipment. Most of the gear we use, you talked about MikroTik routers. You even talked about building a whole lab. I mean, if you're building a lab, you don't have to have all CCRs. I mean, hell, you could do it with HAP lights most of the time, right? Because the software is the same. It's just the CPU is going to be different on them, but they're still going to move things around and configure the same. But spare on the shelf. Keep one of everything you got out in the field because you never know when you're going to need to do a truck roll to repair something, replace something, or an emergency build. You know, there's a music festival that all of a sudden calls you up and they need a link turned up, you know, in 3 days, and you're going to make $5,000 off this thing. It's pretty nice to have some kit that you can just chuck up, you know, and make it happen, stuff like that. So I've seen that more than once. Have you guys run into that?
Some ways, yes. Yeah, we are not the world's best at that. We have some backups. And I, it's in the budget of this year. It's my next step in renovating this place. But yeah, no, we have definitely had times of like, I really hope that doesn't break because we don't have a spare.
Yeah.
And StreakWave takes 2 weeks to get that to us.
I know some of the bigger boys, some of the guys that are very cash flow positive will even have a whole spare tower on the shelf. You know, if they sustain a strike, they can entirely replace a tower. I've seen that before because, yeah, especially if you're depending on what your manufacturer is, right? So say you're using a specific Ubiquiti product and it's notoriously difficult to get new ones. You know, if they happen to have an extra one in stock now, maybe it's a good idea to go ahead and grab it, sort of thing. Not going to name names on any of that stuff, but I mean, it happens, right? Supply chain issues can come up and you don't need to be dealing with that. You know, calling every single vendor you can think of just to see if anybody's got any kit. That's a horrible way to spend your Saturday night after a storm rolls through.
Oh yeah. No, it brings peace of mind, and that's something that you can sell to yourself. It's so always worth being able to bring a little bit of peace of mind because you pull out your hair enough. Well, you probably don't.
Yeah, I've got no money. thanks for that, by the way. Appreciate it. Let's see. Right on the heels of that are keep backups of your configs. I know we're always talking about Unimus. It's a great product. It's free for a handful of routers. So if you've got a few core devices, man, just throw it in there. You know, if you can do differential backups like Unimus does, that's great too, right? So something changed in the network and now it doesn't work, you can actually look and see what it was that changed. But things will break, and the worst times, the most unexpected ways, and it's just really nice to have automated backups of your kit. There's free options out there that take a little bit more work, but yeah, there's some off-the-shelf kit that's not going to break the bank. So I would definitely say keep backups. And most of these things that I talk about, I've done wrong in the past. That's basically how I find my way through life, is to figure out all the wrong ways of doing things until I finally get it right. So,
oh yeah, that's one thing that we have not had many problems with, is we've always had automated backups of each of our towers, because each tower, it's a living organism, and so you have one customer do something weird, and then you're never going to remember that after the lightning hits, and you're like, well, shit, what do I do to make sure everybody works? Or you just, you have to wait till they call you and be like, why isn't this working again? Make it work.
Or testing. Say you're doing a bunch of stuff for testing, and you can't remember what steady state was anymore. You've changed so many things. Or you put something in temporary, right? You guys are doing a temporary workaround for something. You know, it's just, and then you happen to lose that piece of kit right there in that moment. Well, then, you know, you're up shit's creek. That stuff happens.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Backups are the bomb.
All right. So earlier in this episode, I was talking about how I'm a very visual person. I do. I think in pictures, and people try and describe scenarios to me. If I can't put sugar packets on the table in front of me, I probably can't figure out what's happening. You know, I have to see a diagram. So my third tip is diagram your current configuration. And then every time I'm going to build something, I actually make a diagram of what it'll look like when it's done. And I usually go through several iterations of that. So it'll be like version, new build version 1, 2, 3, sometimes even up to 4 before it's like done. And then, when it's complete, you know, I go back through and make sure it actually is updated. And that's, if you have anybody else that's working on this network, if, like you said, it's not set it and forget it, but some parts of your network, you'll put them in there and you won't touch them for what, like 3 years? You come back easily. And you can't remember what you did. But if you've got a diagram, God, it makes life so much simpler. Also, for you guys that ever call in help, you know, if you ever go to a consultant, you ever want to get another set of eyes, any of that stuff, they're going to be coming in completely blind. I mean, imagine, like you said, this is a living organism. Well, you've cultivated this living organism. You've watered it. You've pruned it. You know, you've fertilized it. You've changed its spot. You've been doing that for years. So you know where all the bodies are buried. This new guy coming in doesn't have a clue. Or the new guy you just hired doesn't have a clue. So definitely diagram this stuff. It helps.
Oh, God. It took me almost a year to understand the layout of my network. And it maybe not quite that long. It was a solid 6 to 9 months. Oh, God. It was, and everything had been built up and was known only by my boss. And I was like, if this man has a heart attack, they're gonna double my paycheck. I'm going to live here for a solid 2 months before anything can get fixed. I was like, oh, God. Those first couple months, I was just like, when I realized the state that everything was, I was like, oh shit, we are up a creek and there is no paddle if this man has any issues. And it hurt him. The man been worked to death over the last 5 years because they'd hire somebody, they'd leave within 6 months or just all sorts of other silliness. And so he'd been working 60, 80, 90 hour weeks, keeping a telephone and an internet network running.
That's insane.
Yeah. And then he was trying to farm on the side, and it's just like, he was dying like in so many different ways. And like, he has, like, just for him, like those last few months, he's lost 50 pounds. He's like, has more energy. He's running around doing all sorts of stuff. Like, we're getting all sorts of projects done that I couldn't even have, like, I'd have to schedule 2-3 weeks out just to make sure that he would hopefully have time and the energy and be able to even like show up. Like, he's even like arriving at work reasonably on time. Like, this is being able to have like the map and everything figured out is gonna save you so much up and down. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. And that, I mean, all these kind of dovetail together, but my number four is don't be afraid to ask for help. So I, early in life, I was the kind of person that I had to do it on my own and I could never ask anybody for help, right? To me, it was a sign of weakness. I had to do it at the expense of some really amazing engineers that I could have learned a lot from, but I refused to. It was just so stupid of me. And it was just part of my personality. I've since gotten out of that, but I've also been that guy that you're talking about where you're stress eating and you're just constantly having anxiety. And when you wake up in the morning, you feel sick to your stomach because it's just, you know, there's just so much and it's only you. And I've had people come in that became competent, that got up to a level where they could help me. And it, I mean, nothing that I can think of occupationally has improved my quality of life more than having competent people. So don't be afraid to ask for help. Being on an island is lonely. If you don't have a volleyball you can draw a face on, you know, if you don't have your own Wilson, it's a terrible place to be. So don't strange yourself there for sure. And yeah. You seem like the kind of guy that has no problems asking for help. So you're way ahead of the curve as far as I'm concerned. It took me a long time to get there.
No. I had to be the guy who knew everything and then went into several different industries where I knew shit. And nothing I had coming into was the in any way pertinent. So yeah, I've had to go through the hard knock process of like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm gonna go out look at somebody who looks like they're at least confident and see what they say.
That's all part of the process, right? Everybody gets there at some point. Hopefully you just get there before you lose your mind. And my very last tip is don't be afraid to help others, right? So once you've gained this knowledge, you've grounded out, you figured out how to do it. I know we're in this industry where we feel like if we give our neighbors next to us any information, you know, they'll use that to overtake us. And I'm not saying, you know, go give your secret sauce to the guy who's trying to take your territory. You know, it's the way I feel about it is this knowledge I've gained, it's not mine to keep, right? It's for me to help others with. And this industry we're in, it's hard enough as it is. If your neighbor is doing it the wrong way, like you were talking about with EIRP, if they're overpowering things, it makes it worse for everybody, right? So sometimes helping your neighbor actually helps you as well. But everybody's been there. Everybody's been at ground zero. Everybody started at the bottom or, you know, had something go wrong. And then you just start that quick sweat where you're drenched in sweat, you know, because the shit just hit the fan. All of the alerting is going off, you know, everything's, you know, nobody wants to be there. So if you can help others, I say, do it. Even if it's in a small way, you know, I'm not saying go start a blog or start a podcast because I don't need any extra competition, but, you know, help people however you can.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. We have a pretty strong agreement where we won't go towards one of our competitors to ourselves just because we have such good relationship with them. We share bandwidth to them, they share bandwidth to us. You know, it is so nice being able to just call somebody and be like, hey, like it makes like so many different things so much better. And I wish we could have better relationships with the other competitors around us, just because like I had one lady who couldn't I couldn't bring her service, but I was like, hey, give these guys a call. They should be able to pick you up. And not only is she going to remember me and be like, hey, those guys are really nice, and they hooked me up with somebody who provides good service, you know, she might be able to recommend and give stuff. And like, and just in general, like, you know, you don't have to be cutthroat. Like, there's something to being like, you know what? I have my area and they aren't coming towards me. I'm not going to go towards them. And it's so satisfying because, you get to, you learn stuff so much, so often as well when you're helping people. It's just crazy, you know, just how beneficial, you know, like the Slack channel has been for me. I haven't been amazingly helpful to anybody, I don't think, but just like going through the process and help, like working with people and fixing various things. I learn a lot.
Yeah, man. Definitely, I think everybody in the Slack, whether you're a lurker or a loudmouth, like, you know, like Mike or myself sometimes, I think everybody contributes, right? And to what you were saying, I heard an old saying, it's one teaches and two learn. And I think that's very true. You know, it's as you're working through something, you know, because it's like sometimes you'll understand a concept in your head, but you can't articulate it. So you have to, you know, spend a little time and understand it a little bit better so that you can actually teach it to somebody else. And I've been there before and I've gotten stronger because of it.
Yeah, it really does help. thinking of it as a brotherhood. Because, you know, we little guys, we got to be able to band together a little bit, somewhat, just to be able to deal with Comcast, CenturyLink, those big guys with all their money.
Mm-hmm. Taking them down at a time.
Down with the system.
Oh, starting our own little anarchy club. I like it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Tommy, I've eaten up enough of your time, brother. It's late. And the number five, don't be afraid to help others. You certainly did it with your five tips here, man. So I appreciate it. Anybody have any questions or comments, shoot them towards us. Facebook.com/TheBrothersWiss. Contact us at TheBrothersWiss.com if you're an email type of person. We do the Patreon if you're a patron. We don't give you any extra audio content. I don't know what anybody would want. If anybody has any suggestions, spit it out. But you do get access to the Little Brothers with Slack, which Tommy was talking about, which is a private Slack just for you guys to go ham in there. I love it because it is very courteous. Like sometimes there's spirited discourse, but, you know, I mean, nobody's really being toxic. Like some of the forums and stuff can be. And you've got real humans kind of interacting back and forth, which I really like in real time. So, Tommy, is there by chance, do you want people to contact you on the internet?
I don't really have much of an internet presence, so there's not really anything to contact. If you really want to get a hold of me, go head on over to the Mimosa forums and talk to William Five there. That's me. Or come into the Slack. Otherwise, there's just not a lot of great ways to reach me that aren't my ways for my family.
All right. Well, so. I didn't know if you wanted to promote anything or anything like that.
Yep. Mimosa Forums, William Five, he's your man. If you have questions, I will hook you up because I read the manual.
All right, Tommy. Well, thank you. And thank you guys for listening. And we'll catch you next time. Learning,
lighting up the towers so people can start searching. Shooting up the web in neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes. We're loud and annoying. But we're informative facts. We're not disappointing. Just give us a listen because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry. You're forgiven. Giving.